Hello and welcome everybody to the Pick Six Podcast, where we are broadcasting as Ted Carter leads a squadron of people out to the Pac-12 to bring back four teams, or so says all of the realignment Twitter. There's now officially realignment Twitter. Like, there's like people, and this is all that they do. Hello, everybody. I'm Sam McCune, along with Tom Chattel and Evan Bland. We are on day two of the Big Ten baseball tournament. Nebraska is about to, well, they're not going to tee off. They're going to have the first pitch.
They hope they'll tee
here
off.
In about.
They better tee off.
That's right. Here in about 2 hours. Thanks for everybody for joining us. Here it is, mid-May, late May. At this point, we're going to talk some recruiting a little bit with Daniel Kalin's commit. We'll talk about what that means, what it might mean going forward. We're going to talk about Tom's conversation with Ted Carter. We talked about, actually, what's interesting is we talked about part two last week, your part two column. We'll talk a little bit more about the part one column from Sunday, and also the news that Ted Carter is basically going to be Trev Albert's boss going forward, or the boss of any athletic director that Nebraska might have. So we'll talk a little bit about that, and we'll obviously talk about the Husker baseball team. I want to remind everybody to listen to our other podcasts, both the Half Court Press podcast and Even Field podcast that focuses specifically on women's sports. Good stuff there on both of those, and remind people to subscribe to the Omaha World Herald at www.omaha.com/subscribe. I think it's 26 weeks for a buck. That's 6 months, effectively. Today is May 24th. If you take that thing all the way through, what does that get you to, Evan?
Get you through Black Friday.
Black Friday. Yeah, right, get you through the entire regular season. So you're going to know whether Nebraska's in a bowl game if you subscribe to the Omaha World Herald today. We're going to get to baseball in a second. Yeah. I want to start with this stuff, the realignment, and with the conversation that Tom had with Ted Carter. Nice takes today about why Ted Carter is so involved in athletics, why he likes it. Tom, we'll start with you. So Ted Carter, according, you know, the Board of Regents have put something forward that'll be voted on next week, where he effectively becomes the boss of Nebraska athletics, the final word, so to speak. Trev Alberts obviously is the athletic director and handles the day-to-day. But previous to now, the chancellor, who was Ronnie Green, was Trev Alberts' boss. Now that appears to be Ted Carter. You talked to Carter about why he likes athletics, and you also kind of talked about why you think this is a good thing. And I'm just curious what your thoughts are here on the podcast about it.
Yeah, I think it's a natural. But Nebraska, to me, is I don't know if it's different or weird, but they had this extra layer of the system president. You know, most colleges have either the chancellor or the president, and that's who goes to the conference meetings. And you know, so here that was always Ronnie Green. But Ted is very qualified to be. I think he could be the NCAA president. I mean, I think that's how qualified he is. He's a sports nut. He follows everything. He goes to games. He's at a lot of things. But what I noticed is he's always at all the press conferences, the big ones,
right?
The volleyball in the stadium press conference. He's there. He speaks. They hire Matt Rhule. He's there. He speaks. Usually that's the chancellor. That's where Harvey Perlman got up and kind of stumbled around and tried to tell a joke. And, you know, here's Steve Peterson. Now he's gone. Here's Tom Osborne. Now he's gone. Here's Sean Eichhorst. Now he's gone. You know, we went through all this with Harvey. Always out front. He was the face of the, in a lot of ways, the Husker Athletics. So I asked Ted, well, I said, why is that you? Why are you doing that? And he goes, well, it's intentional because I care. I want to be the sports. He wants to be the sports guy because he loves it. And so, and he's more qualified than any president I've ever seen. The only one who came close to me to that for me was probably Gene Buttig, who was the KU chancellor for years, what little town in western Nebraska is he from? Not Scotts Bluff. South of Scotts Bluff. Where? Help me out here. Southwest
Kimball?
Nebraska.
Kim.
No.
McCook.
McCook. McCook, Nebraska. Thank you.
That is Southwest Nebraska.
Thank
truly
you, sports
Southwest.
Fans. He's from there, and he went on to become the National League president. He's a big baseball guy.
Mm.
And so he's about as qualified. But this is, I think, Ted Carter's, you know, you go back to, nobody's going to remember these names of Nebraska. Martin Massengale from the 70s, James Meisner.
L. Dennis Smith was a president.
I mean, yeah. And then you had your Graham Spanier, who was the chancellor.
He was a chancellor, and he was pretty involved.
Right. But I don't think he was as qualified as to do it as Ted Carter.
No, he wasn't.
He hired a good AD in Byrne, but he, you know, of course, history will judge him otherwise at Penn State.
It will.
But I'm just saying that Ted Carter is – he's really the man for this, and he helped bring Matt Rhule and also Trev Alberts here because he was so qualified. He spoke the language. They felt comfortable, and coaches, they love money. They all love money. They all want to spend it. They all want to have it. But, you know, can I win there, and who's got my back? Those are the two main things for a coach when they go to a job. And if those things aren't good, they aren't leaving. That's why a lot of guys don't leave. They stay where they're at, and they get more money. But who's got my back? The president, is everybody aligned? Nebraska has not been aligned for years. Now they are. The big reason is Ted Carter loves sports. So it's. I think he was doing this all along. It became official yesterday. But he's the guy. I would want him to have Nebraska's vote in the conference boardroom. And I would want him to have his voice in there. And he's really into these rumors, and I'll have more on that in my Sunday column. But he was talking about some of the rumors he saw on I don't know if it was message boards, but the blog rumors about there's a Pac-12 school that's going to replace Nebraska in the Big Ten. And he goes, "Let me tell you," he pointed at me, "that's not going to happen." He's like pointing at me, and so he's. He's into it, and I love that, because a lot of academians, they just want to know, okay, where's my suite? Is there going to be popcorn there? Can I get bowl tickets? Can I get golf? that's an academian, you know, that's for the sports. So,
not a bad life.
Right. But it's not what Nebraska needs. Nebraska needs to be have the top guy be a sports guy. And, you know. His Top Gun name was Slapshot. So hockey guy.
He had a great. He had one of the best names. That's
so,
a great.
I'm looking forward to. This will be the last I'll say of it. This Sunday, he goes and he starts telling stories about the Top Gun days. He was Tom Cruise's handshake, the first guy Tom Cruise met on the set, and he showed him around. We go through all of his days in the Navy and all the stuff, why he came to Nebraska, why he's doing this, and what he thinks about Nebraska athletics and what he wants to do with it. And then we go into the NIL and the portal, and athletes are going to be employees soon. So we're talking about all that stuff. So that's Sunday. Give me space, Sam. Give me space. I need it.
We'll work.
Memorial Day, Sunday Reader. So hopefully Nebraska's in the Big Ten title game. I can go to that Sunday afternoon. So we'll see.
Right. We'll see. Just a couple of background thoughts here on everything that you just said. In 2014, Sean Eichhorst fired Bo Pelini and did so with the blessing of Harvey Perlman. I know that Sean Eichhorst did not tell the Regents ahead of time.
Right.
That was a source of frustration and consternation. Then he hired Mike Riley.
That's why Bo set himself on fire that day.
Well, that was 2013.
Challenging Eichhorst and Harvey to fire him if you want to.
That was in 2013.
Right, and it didn't happen.
It didn't happen because there were people who stopped it.
The region said,
Right. So Eichhorst executed that plan the following year, and then he went out and hired Mike Riley. And what happened after that was the Regents put in a rule that said that the university president, at that time Hank Bounds, had to approve any contract over a certain amount, I think it was $500,000, basically that was the first, that was the second half of the conversation of like, you're not going to hire somebody we don't want you to hire. That was the second half. The first half just got executed yesterday. And to be clear, I'm not saying that anybody's going anywhere. I think everybody likes everything that's going on, but I think there's, we're not going to have a situation again where a chancellor who is focused mostly on academics can make a choice and can affirm a choice 17 years from now that's based on an AD not liking a coach or whatever. And so I think that's part of it. You know, now to be clear, the Husker team, all the way from the total leadership down to the last person, had everything they wanted in 2017 when they had, you know, Hank and Bill and Scott and the whole crew, and they didn't win anything. So they had their chance to execute that entire plan. I think what you have now in place is an AD that really likes the president, a coach who really likes the president, and I think there was some conversations, some clarity in the process of like, hey, Chancellor Green's great. I love Ronnie. But he's not going to be here forever. He's going to announce his retirement. So there needs to be a relationship that's consistent. So I think those were always, there was some sensitivity, I think, from some folks who are close to the chancellor of how often, you know, Alberts and Rule would talk specifically about Carter, even though Green's the one who hired him. But you know, all that's going to be gone now. And Rodney D. Bennett, who's going to be the next chancellor, almost certainly will be in charge of running the University of Nebraska-Lincoln. And Ted Carter will be in. You made the great point, the front porch of the university system. I would argue that Husker Athletics and now UNMC are the two front porches. And I think UNMC has played a role in making sure that Nebraska stays in the Big Ten because they are a powerhouse. And the Big Ten's not letting UNMC go anywhere. I mean, that is an incredible institution, and it has made Nebraska money. And it has created a need for Nebraska to remain in because they are one of the world's leaders in all kinds of research, including COVID research.
Mm. Yeah, we talked about that too in depth about Kevin Warren, the COVID mess. Did Nebraska ever want to leave the Big Ten? And the short answer is you don't leave the Big Ten. He said nobody leaves the Big Ten. Never going to happen. Forget about all that stuff. But yeah, I was unhappy. That's what Carter said. With Warren, we talked about it a long time, and sure, we hashed it all out. But that's what you have to do. But anyway, so yeah, it's I had somebody email me. Reader said, "Well, what happens? This is great, but what happens after Ted leaves and the next president isn't so good with sports?" Well, it's a good point, but you need to, I think Nebraska, you always need to have a guy who knows sports. Okay? It isn't, you're not going to go hire a sports guy only. But the president of Nebraska should always understand the athletic arena. Always. It's that important here.
Yeah.
So
I agree. And there may come a day, too, when the Board of Regents is not so intrinsically interested in the sports. That day is probably going to come, and that's the day when they can reverse that rule. I mean, they can just strike the language. That's always been an intensely interested group in athletics. Well, I should say three or four of them have, especially when Governor Pillen was on the board. Obviously, there was an incredible amount of interest from Pillen and from Tim Clare and Rob Schaefer and a few others. There are other people on the Board of Regents who really couldn't care less about sports. And although I suspect it will be unanimous, it won't surprise me if there's a no vote among the regions. So like, you know what, this is really not the purview of what we need to be worrying about. Why is the assistant president wrapped up in that? There may be somebody who votes that way. You just never know. On to the realignment piece. This is, you know, there's been a lot going on here in the last week or so. Mm-hmm. And your Carter interview just happened to be kind of in the middle of it. You had the ACC with its Magnificent Seven or whatever the hell it's called. Wanting to vie for, you know, additional revenue, unequal revenue sharing.
Right.
You've got this conversation. There's something going on percolating with the Pac-12 and ESPN shutting them off. Now you got the Barry Trammell piece where he says, he quotes a Big 12 coach.
Well,
that they're going, Colorado's going to go to the Big 12. Like, well, all, there's something going
this
on.
This is like the 10th time that's been written. This has been going on for months because the Pac-12 can't get their thing done. And maybe they are on schedule. Maybe they're not. But ACC is the one to watch. Everybody's tied into that contract until 2036. God help us, we're all somewhere to still in 2036. That's a long way. But these school of Clemson and Florida State and Miami are trying to compete with the SEC and the Big Ten schools, Ohio State, Michigan, and Bama, and Georgia. And if one of them is getting $90 million, and the other one, ACC schools are getting 30 or 40 or whatever it is, that's not good. And so even if you give them, ACC says, okay, if you make the playoff, you get more, you get a larger share of the money, that's still not going to, that's still going to pale in comparison. So it's not going to be good enough. So those schools are going to try to lead the ACC and join the Big Ten or the SEC eventually. Now, the question is, how do they do it and how soon do they do it? But it's going to happen. And by God, I'm all for it. I think the ACC never should have gotten into the football business. Yes, they have some football tradition. Go back to being basketball. Go back to being the Tobacco Road identity. Go back. Unfortunately, that's going to be gone because Carolina's going to go with them probably. They're going to go to the. I think they're a better fit in the SEC probably for them. But all this stuff, I would not be surprised to see Florida State or Miami in the Big Ten. Miami has the academic chops. Florida State, whatever. But Nebraska's in there, so what are we talking about, right? So, it's not about that. It's about athletics and about TV money. So, and I take a shot at Nebraska. That's where my wife went. Very good academic school, but I'm not known for it, by the way. But maybe now in the Big Ten they will be. So. So anyway, all this stuff is swirling around, and it just takes one thing to get it going. And I don't think that thing is Colorado. I think the Pac-12, if they have their act together, they lose Colorado, they call up San Diego State, come on in, and nobody knows the difference. But they can't lose all four of those teams in the Southwest. So. Anyway, Sam, it's for Husker fan, Big Ten fan, there's nothing going on right now. I don't expect the Big Ten to go after Oregon or Washington. They don't add anything. They don't add – there's not any more money really to give the Big Ten, not right now. And Oregon and Washington, you wouldn't do it for them if you get Notre Dame. That's the chess move. How do you get Notre Dame in here? You add Notre Dame's opponents, so they have nobody to play. Well, USC's coming. Sorry, USC's here. Go get Stanford, maybe. I don't think they will, but the ACC school, if they can get a couple of ACC schools to bring Notre Dame in, and then make them part of the NBC package, NBC, Notre Dame, and Big Ten together, they play each other. It's an alliance. That leads to something, maybe. I think there'll be something in the works. I don't see them going west. I see them going east and right next door, South Bend.
I think I'll only add this. If you think about the state legislatures in Oregon and Washington, progressive, not going to get into politics here. What I will say is the commitment to higher ed, just the ethos and the value of it is pretty high.
Mm-hmm.
I don't envision the state legislatures of either one of those states being comfortable with separating Oregon and Oregon State or Washington and Washington State easily. I just don't.
I think they ought to be on alert right now. We need to save the Pac-12 and do whatever we can to do it and save it. So,
because I know Oklahoma and Oklahoma State split, but you know the Big 12 and the Big 8 certainly better than either one of us. I think what I'll say is that Oklahoma was always the flagship school in the state of Oklahoma.
Right.
And Oklahoma's legislature is way different from Oregon's. I just don't envision a scenario where that Oregon and Washington can just say, yeah, we're going to go and leave these two, leave the two ag schools to do whatever they want. Like, come on. I just don't see
that. What I hate about realignment, and I hate a lot of things about it, is it separates these schools in terms of their so-called value. Right, everybody gets a value. Everybody gets some kind of a ranking. You're better. Nebraska's better than KU or K State because they're here. They're in the Big Ten. Well, they obviously were. Well, they are worth much more in terms of TV money. But damn it, Nebraska, K State, all these Nebraska, Oklahoma, Colorado, all these games that were played for years, that's where the value is. It's not been some kind of TV money worth ranking. It's just college football's lost its mind. It's just the stuff that is the meaningful stuff is in these games and these old rivalries and being able to drive to a game and the short trips and Nebraska, Rutgers, and Maryland, and it's we got USC now in there. It's not what it's all about. And all these universities are all worth something. They really are. They have their own identity. They all matter. And there's people, Kansas State and Iowa State, who have been getting trampled on because they don't have a TV worth. Well, you're still a great university, and you're still a great fan base, and I just hate to see it. And probably gonna be a Power Two. What the hell is that gonna be? Can you imagine the Power Two baseball tournament? Where's that gonna be played at? I mean,
why would the
Dodger Stadium? I mean, it's nuts. So, that's the part I hate is that the fans of these schools. They feel bad because our school doesn't matter. We must suck. No, you don't suck. You're a great school. KU, great school. But they're on the wrong side of the football equation. So that's my rant. But I'm just I was thinking about that the other day. I really hate that part of it because everybody's attacking each other right now. The Big 12 people are attacking. Yeah. They want to raid the Big 12. They want to kill it off. No, the Pac-12 deserves to have the Pac-12, all these West schools play each other, and all their goofy little rivalries that are fun. But I will say...
What person on UConn's campus thought it'd be a good idea for UConn to leave the Big East to go to the Big 12?
Because they did it once before. Somebody's stuck with football in their head. They're basketball now. They belong. Their identity is basketball. Big East, New York City, the Garden. Look at them. They're killing it with NIL.
Oh yeah.
They're winning the national championship. Very strange. They're getting all the players they want. They basically forced Ed Cooley to move from Providence to Georgetown because he could not recruit UConn at Providence. So it's
very strange.
People are afraid to. Why can't we just have basketball? Why can't the ACC just be basketball?
Oh yeah, I don't know.
Why can't the Pac-12 just be the surfer dudes who play Stanford Cal and shoot off cannons and they go crazy? They have the bands and why can't we have that?
I'll galaxy brain it for just a half second and then we'll move on.
Yeah, sorry.
No, this is believe me, this is really off topic. But my hunch is that some of what's going on here with the TV money, and this is UConn. This is, I guess, the point I'm leading to, is higher ed's coming into a pretty severe recession. Enrollment's down. College costs too much for too many people.
Mm-hmm.
And, that's part of it. I think part of it, too, is some of these universities are looking around and going, our state legislatures are not where we're at. We know that things are going to get tight soon, especially if you don't have students coming. And especially if you're not able to maybe get some students from places that, you want to get them from because of COVID or whatever. I mean, we had these huge, enrollment declines because of COVID for 2 years. And so, you didn't get some of the students that you normally have gotten. I think there's a big budget crunch. And I think UConn's even though we did all the things that we just did, and they did great stuff in basketball, they're like, hey, if somebody can throw us another $25 million in the Big 12, by God, that's job saved. That's kids taught. That's teachers that we can bring in who are elite in their fields. like, there's stuff going on that we, it's not really our job to report, but higher ed is in a crunch. And so I think that's part of where you're seeing this money thing come into play, where these, it's not true of Nebraska because the athletic department makes, you know, covers its own bills and then some. But a lot of these universities are like, we need the money. Like, our allocation from state legislatures is going down. Tuition is still where it's at. We can't really lower it easily, and our enrollment's hitting a valley because of COVID and because of other reasons. And college costs too much money, and they've got to find a way to figure that out. And if they don't figure that out, then I think you're going to see, you know, a lot of universities in tough spots. All right, Galaxy Brain done. I could talk about that for like literally
good.
4 hours.
That's good stuff.
I won't do it. Let's move to Danny Kalin. Okay, so I think this is a huge deal, a huge deal. Nebraska lands Danny Kalin, the Bellevue West quarterback, 6'3", 205, some say 195. Who the hell cares? He's around that weight. This is a good football player. Have you watched him play? Have you watched him play in person, and have you watched his tape?
I watched his tape.
This is a good player.
It is.
This is a good quarterback in high school.
To what stands out to me, I mean, the his path to Nebraska is really interesting, because we've talked on this podcast before about how they missed the boat, and that was it. And not through any fault of their own, right? Because you got to play the string out with Dylan Raiola because of all the inherent ties and his ability and all the rest. But, you know, what really stood out to me was how they were able to walk that line, to find that fine balance between recruiting the guy that they wanted first and the other guy who they offered in Kalin, and they could be honest and say, we're going to pursue him. We can't take your commitment right now. But if you're patient with us, maybe something will work out. And, of course, he commits to Missouri, which is his right to do. But Raiola commits elsewhere, and he comes back. I mean, what a recoup of talent for Nebraska on the back end, when how many examples over the years have we seen where that guy, the ship has sailed, he's done, he's gone. To me, that's like one of the most obvious examples of the value of transparency in recruiting. And I mentioned this with my Malachi Coleman story a few weeks ago as well. Just the value of being straight up with a guy and saying, like, we want you, but everybody knows that we want this other guy more. And so we're going to tell you that, right? We're not going to sugarcoat
it. A genuine article quality about the staff that I'm going to wait and see more and more, you know, what they're all about. Still, we don't know yet. But you're right. You go straight up with the guy, and Nebraska people and kids, they want to be told straight up. You know, just give it to me. Be honest with me. Give it to me. I can take it. Mm-hmm. And don't try to run around. And so these guys appear to be doing that. And another thing Rule does is some kid goes somewhere else. He gives him a retweet or gives him a like. Yeah, congrats. You know, I go get him. And, you know, is that...
You can get him the second time around.
Is that right? What I'm just saying, is that Rule? And I think it has to be Rule, because I don't know that you can fake that. I think there's something to that, and it's a little different. It's sort of a bigger picture thing where, yeah, he might come back around, but we're not burning bridges here. Mm-hmm. You know, we want all bridges to be open to Nebraska. We don't want to burn anything and call somebody a name or this or that. And so I think you're right. I think there's a genuine article thing going on there. And I also wonder how big a deal is this. I think quarterbacks are bigger. They just are. And you know, tight ends, they've lost tight ends to Iowa. They've lost this guy to this, you know, this here and there. But quarterbacks are bigger. And how many quarterbacks have they gotten from here that, you know, wanted to be a Husker or wanted to be there? I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, they didn't get Zane. I think the right guy at the right time, maybe, in some ways. I don't know.
Yeah, he's a good player.
I want to ask you, Sam, like, sure. What does his commitment to Nebraska to you signal about how Nebraska wants to run its offense moving forward? Because Jeff Sims, as we know, is fleet of foot. Rules called him a passer first who can run.
Yeah.
Do you see Kalin's skill set fitting into what they will do with Jeff Sims, or do you think that signals an ability to maybe shift into the future with what the offense can be?
Well, the offense is always the engine of the offense is sort of a San Francisco 49ers pro style system. Now, it's interchangeable parts. There's a lot of different things you can do. If you look at the Eagles in the NFL, they incorporate Jalen Hurts into that system. But if for some reason Jalen Hurts had decided not to sign with the Eagles, Nick Sirianni would have had another offense for a different quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
So there's things that there's packages and parts of a playbook that you can sort of plug in or plug out based on how you want to build, you know, the Mr. Potato Head.
Mm-hmm.
So I think part of, I'd say about 75% of what Jeff Sims will be running is what Danny Kalen would run. Maybe not that much, maybe 60%. So the run plays and some of the play action passes and the, you know, some of the things where you're getting the quarterback on the move, they would still do that. What changes is if you, okay, if you have Sims and you want to do some stuff with the run game, there's packages out there that everyone has developed and there's things that you can do. And they've now got it to the point where it's not just like Rich Rod, you read the guy and you, you know, you give or you keep. It's like, you know, you can run power. You can run all kinds of stuff with it. Like you can get pullers. You can turn your quarterback into a running back where the timing is almost the same as if you were handing it off, all this kind of stuff. And so like you can plug and play that stuff in, but they were always moving in the direction of, so there's two components to this offense that I think will be challenging for other teams. One of the components is multiple personnel groupings, right? So that's one of the components. You can put different groups of people on the field on any given play. And that forces the defense at some point in the course of the game to either have their best players have to adjust to different kinds of players on the field or to sub in their own personnel. And anytime you sub in personnel, you know, and I've been playing way too much 2K with my son. Anytime you sub in a player, your defense fundamentally changes. And so that's basketball, I know. But when you start subbing in players, you have to alter the way that you play. And maybe you're subbing in a guy that isn't as good. So that's one of the pieces that I think they're going to do. And then the other piece, which seems sort of, it's like the other side of the same coin, is formational versatility based on the players on the field.
Yeah.
So maybe you'll have players on the field who are in a 22, one formation, and then the next play, this seems kind of unlikely, they're in an 11 because you went, you know, Thomas Fedoni flexes out. Your fullback was Janiron Bonner, and all of a sudden he's flexed out on the other side, and you got Billy Kemp on the edge. Like, you're doing all these different things. And so you're challenging defenses both in the personnel groupings that they'll have on the field, and then once that personnel grouping's on the field, if you want to go fast, you can change that. Danny Kalen fits what they want to do. Okay, he can throw the ball short, intermediate routes pretty well. He's a crisp thrower. He buys time when he moves to his left. When you move to your left to throw to your right, that's a skill that you have to, you know, access. There's reasons why you move to your left to throw to your right, right? Mm-hmm. Because you're trying to create an angle or a window of a guy that maybe the back is turned of the defender, but you're trying to get the guy over the top. Danny can do that. Danny's able to move off of a platform and move to his left, half rolls, fire hard into the target. He throws the ball when he hits his back foot, which doesn't happen that often with college quarterbacks. But that means by the end of his drop, he's throwing. And when you throw by the end, when you're throwing by the time at the top of your drop, A, you got more power. B, it's really hard for the defense to be where it needs to be. And a lot of quarterbacks will get to the top of their drop, they'll hit their back foot, and then they will shuffle 4, 5, 6 times. Then they'll move, and the play is shot by then, the whole framework. And so Danny does a lot of things that, quite honestly, I would say he's a 4-star. You know, like there's a lot of skill sets with him that I would say he's a 4-star quarterback. Dylan Raiola has a better arm. I think he's a little bit better athlete. And there's throws that Raiola is able to make that are just like, God dang. But they're pretty similar players in a lot of ways.
Hmm.
And in some ways, Danny's, you know, does some things that Dylan doesn't have to do because he's so athletic. But Kalen's a really good addition. And they would have had him in the class if Raiola wasn't in the class back
in December.
Months
ago, yeah.
People have asked me, okay, so compare him to Zane Flores. I think Zane Flores is really, really good. I think he's in a nice fit for his skill set at Oklahoma State. For what Nebraska wants to do, I will take Kalen over Flores just by a bit. But I think Flores is, if you want to do what Oklahoma State does, I'd say Flores is a better fit. Athletic. He can run. He can make the across the body, you know, downfield throw. But for where Nebraska wants to go, I think Kalen's a really, really nice fit. I think they got a player they really like.
The recruiting piece is interesting too. I mean, like Tom said, you got to go back. Heinrich Harburg was an in-state scholarship recruit, but like Kalen has played at a powerhouse at Bellevue West, where you wonder if a guy like Isaiah McMorris or Devon Hall would consider, you know, coming to Nebraska, giving him a second look, running this thing into the college space.
Right.
I think that part's fascinating. Kalen, I mean, he's been on the national scene for a long time. Florida State was his first offer a couple years ago. He's done the camp circuits.
He's done a lot of 7-on-7.
Right.
Very, very seasoned in that space, and he's good in that space too.
I've talked to him once or twice, but he also seems to have that sort of intangible quality that you want in a quarterback guy. You know, that people can rally around too. So a lot of things.
I think the more you can connect with Mike Huffman's program, did the better. I know that they've gotten receivers Xavier Betts and some other, you know, in the past, but he's been producing an awful lot of guys who can play college football. I think that needs to be, I mean, I'm not saying everybody has to go to Nebraska, but that's a pipeline that ought to be opened. And I think Huffman would genuinely love to do that, but he's going to let the kids do it, you know, and Nebraska hasn't always been there for them. So maybe this is the beginning of that. Who knows?
I think that's a great point. I think there are kids in Omaha that just want to leave Nebraska.
Mm-hmm.
They leave Nebraska, and then they realize that they wish they had stayed in Nebraska. And we'll see if there's anybody.
Well, and again, Sam, we forget what Nebraska is like when it's winning.
Right.
We just forget that.
And the kids don't even know.
It's a different place to live.
Yeah.
It's a great place to live now. It's unbelievable when they're winning.
Right.
And the atmosphere. And people forget, we want to be a, you don't see the Huskers kids wear the Husker stuff like you would if this thing gets going. So I'm anxious to see the transfer portal when that gets going. I'm predicting when. Not if, when. Don't ask me when, but it would be when.
Yeah. We'll talk more recruiting next week. They're going to get, you know, they have a huge June coming up, and the area where they need to get good is on the lines of scrimmage, and they need to find a way to get some of the guys they have coming to commit to them, and they have some really good offers. We'll get them then. Let's finish with baseball. Nebraska baseball starting the Big Ten tournament here in a couple of hours. They play Rutgers to start. I think the question that I would ask you, Evan, since this will be, you know, that game will be old by the time some people listen to this, is if Nebraska has won the Big Ten tournament on Sunday and gotten the automatic bid to the NCAA tournament for the league, what will they have done over the last 4 days to get there?
I think, first of all, their stars would have to be stars. Like, Bryce Matthews has to do what he's done all year. Max Anderson has to do what he's done all year. That, to me, has long been what separates them from some of these other teams in the field. You know, because they're going to have weaknesses, right? Like, Will Bolt said it the other day. Like, they're going to start Emmett Olson, Jace Kaminska, and after that, they don't know. They'll figure it out.
Chase Hanneman?
Maybe. Probably not. Kyle Perry, possibly. Maybe it's a bullpen day. But, like, you look at Iowa, or you look at Rutgers, they could tell you who their first four starting pitchers are going to be because they've had guys who dominated the midweek and did all that. So that's the part Nebraska's going to have to piece together. And so if you're a little behind relative to your competition in that way, the deeper you go, you have to make up for it offensively. And so that, to me, is where, again, your first team, all Big Ten guys need to be those guys. Gabe Swanson is a guy we haven't mentioned much. Like, he is essentially what Scott Schreiber was for Nebraska for years. That's the season that he just had, and nobody talks about him because that's what Max and Bryce have done. So I think your stars need to be stars. Your pitching just can't fall apart. And then, you know, you ride the crowd. Omaha's, they're going to have a crowd there. If you watch the opening day games, like, the crowd was not impressive at all. There were
there were like 100 people there last night.
There were a lot of empty seats. And so, like,
and Maryland was lucky to win.
They were.
Lucky.
Yes. Yeah. That was not sustainable how they won that game.
No.
But like, I think that can be of value too for Nebraska, especially early in some of these games where, like, if you're an opponent and you've played in front of this sleepy stadium for 2 days and suddenly you've got 10,000 people in the stands, like, I think that could affect him too.
I really think that is the story of the week. And I wonder, will Nebraska, you know, will the crowd inspire them, bring something out of them, and you know, get them jump started? Or will it become kind of a burden? Will it put too much pressure? Oh, we're expected to do this. Look at all these people here. They're expecting us to win. I really think the first game today is huge.
Mm-hmm.
I think momentum with this crowd could be just people. I don't think a lot of people believe. They want to believe, but you give them, you know, proof. You win that first game, okay. Then you can win that second one Thursday night.
Oh, Maryland's beatable. Yeah.
Then it's just like, oh, wow. Then watch that crowd Saturday. Then mm-hmm. it becomes a thing. And once it becomes a thing, it might be hard to stop. But it's, I think that the crowd can really, it just depends on will they feed off it or will it become too much? And, you know, it's because they played in front of I don't want to know what the crowds were. They played Creighton twice. The second crowd looked like it was pretty big.
Yeah, it was like 7,000 or 8,000 or something.
They didn't perform in those games. They found a way to lose. They won the last one, but so they've done both. So I think that's the story: is the crowd. People haven't had this tournament in 4 years. They haven't been out to it because they've kind of forgotten about it. They didn't have it for 2 years of COVID. And all of a sudden, they didn't go last year. So they've kind of forgotten what this is like. Well, we were there in 2019. We saw what it was like.
It was a lot of fun, and, yeah.
You know, so it's a situation where if they win a couple, then it becomes a thing. It's really big, and I think it'll be hard to stop.
Well, and fair or not, this is the defining point of the season. Like, you could be listening to this podcast Thursday in the middle of the day, and they could be out of the tournament. They could be 0-2, and it could be, boy, this was a disappointing season. Or they could win four games in this week's long stretch, and suddenly all the midweek struggles and all the early season consternation is forgotten. So, like, a lot of what happens this week will shape what they do. They have the ability, but the story is the same. Like, they have the talent to do it. Can they go out there? Do you trust them to go out there?
The way
they
both has to be on these guys to embrace the pressure, embrace the moment. This is why he came to Nebraska, to play with these kind of stakes. It's, you know, win or go home. Yeah, that's what you want. That's why you came here. So to go to the NCAA tournaments, to play for that, play in the big stages. So, we talked about this off mic earlier about, you know, I thought Will Bolt would have this program fighting and clawing, and they have at times, but other times they haven't. And I think that I the people are kind of waiting to see. And so I like to see that kind of attitude come back this week too.
I think, you know, offensively they've had a really good year.
Yeah,
and I think Will Bolt is in part in charge of that. Who's running the pitching? Because they don't have enough arms, or if they do have arms, the arms that they had 3 years ago aren't as good as they used to be. Now, maybe that's okay, injuries, maybe that's surgeries, whatever that is. But it's a pitching game. I mean, we know that. If you have all the arms, you advance in college baseball. It's not that the hitting doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. But, you know, if we look at these elite teams, a lot of them have the arms.
Yeah, you have an ace.
So what's the, well, not just an ace, but like the whole thing. They got a closer. They got an elite closer. When Nebraska was good 2 years ago, they had
Schwellenbach to close it.
Well, they had Schwellenbach to close it, and they had, you know, they had
Povich,
yeah. And then the ground ball guy. And
yeah, right. Chance Roach, yep.
They had that. So
Well, you know, the pitching part.
Okay, so let me frame this question a little bit differently. Sorry to interrupt you.
You're good.
If Nebraska doesn't win the Big Ten tournament and its season is over, what's the thing that they think about for the next 48 hours after they're eliminated of, like, we've got to change X? What would that be?
I mean, it would probably be more impact arms, I think. And just the general regret of, wow, we hit a school record 95 home runs. we're going to have two guys drafted in the top five rounds of the MLB draft, positionally, which they've never done before. And then, and they have what? Essentially a 500-ish season to show for it. You bow out in the Big Ten tournament. Like, that's the frustrating part. Like, long-term, next year, how do you inspire hope when you lose guys of that quality, of that caliber offensively? But yeah, I think pitching-wise, that's probably going to be what it would be. I mean, you're going to have a few arms fewer than you want. But like, again, in this field, only two teams have a better team ERA than Nebraska does. Iowa and Rutgers. Everybody else has worse pitching than Nebraska. So like, it hasn't lived up to national standards stuff, but it's been good enough to compete. I think that's kind of,
They played the worst Big Ten schedule though, haven't they?
Who, Nebraska?
Like, yeah.
I don't think so. I think Rutgers has actually. Okay. But yeah, I mean,
and they played Minnesota, Northwestern.
The bottom of the
Penn
Big Ten
State
is really
bad.
Ohio
State. They didn't play Indiana.
That's right.
They didn't play Rutgers. I mean,
sure. I'm just saying.
They played this.
All I'm saying is the pitching is not like the gaping hole weakness. Okay. It's not leaking oil.
Okay.
Like, they're still a top 90 ERA team in the country. They're still third in the league in that. So like, it might not be like the clear asset that it was 2 years ago.
That sounds like Nebraska's football offense from 2021 though, where everybody says, well, they average 410 yards a game. Yeah, but they didn't score. Like, they didn't win games. So okay.
Yeah. They needed depth in the rotation. I think that's because like, we went into the year and it felt like they would have arms, and I think they generally have.
Right.
But like, when your Sunday guy is like your sixth option that they wanted to be the Sunday guy and is like a two-way guy, like, that we've spoken to that like with walk-ons in different sports before. We said, okay, hey, it's a great story that this guy's a walk-on and he's doing well, but it also says something about the program.
Yeah, I used to say that about Mojo Haggie.
Yeah, we said it about Haggie. We said it in football.
Well, I said it. You didn't.
Sure. But I think there's some of that going on with the pitching as well.
Sure.
Well, I don't know.
You give them a chance. Do you think they have a chance? Or like, what percentage chance would you give them? And don't give me 12.5. I don't want that. Like, what percentage chance do they have of winning the whole thing?
Well, I mean, I'm operating, of course, after seeing what happened yesterday, too. 20%, I think, is about right.
Who's the favorite?
Iowa, I think. I mean, they're probably the hottest right now. They have the most pitching depth. The fact that they won on Tuesday really sets them up well. Like, that third or fourth game when so many other teams are going to be scrambling for who the heck you're going to start, they're going to have a guy. So probably Iowa, if I had to guess.
Be pretty sweet to see Iowa and Nebraska play for the title on Sunday.
That'd be something else.
God dang. That'd be great. And they're on different sides of the bracket, so they can do that.
Absolutely.
Woo! Let's hope for that. 20,000 fans. You know?
What a story, though, that isn't being talked about, this Iowa gambling. How many games did that impact? Should they be here? Should they still be?
It's a good point.
Well, their star hitter's not been playing since that
report
came out.
I'm saying, how deep did it go? How many guys? What kind of impact did on some of the games earlier? How many games were, impacted by winning and losing and
right.
guys doing this or that? They're going to go to the NCAA regionals. Like, and can you imagine?
Find out that they were doing something with their own games, that would be bad, yeah.
I think so. But that's what I'm saying. We don't know either way.
I don't know if
so. Should
anything.
They be playing? I guess they should.
I don't know
be
if there's lines on college baseball games, are there?
You can bet. Yeah, that's why the Alabama coach was
you
like
bet in the SEC. Can you bet Big Ten baseball games?
I've never looked. I don't know. I guess I can't speak as an authority on that.
Is there enough money that would move between?
I mean,
if you make any bet on a Big Ten baseball game, you're probably going to get flagged for like $10. You know what's going on here with this guy?
I mean, they're innocent until proven guilty, but
yeah. Oh, yeah.
But I feel like this kind of just went away.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's under investigation. Yeah,
yeah. It's funny, everybody hit on for a while, but I'm just saying they're under active investigation for gambling, and they're still competing. Okay.
Well, yeah. The players they identified, at least initially, are not. But
yeah.
Yes, the team still
is.
Well,
they must have a hell of a team if they're still winning without those guys, right?
Yeah, that's right. They have some depth.
So.
Okay, that is our podcast for this week. For Tom and Evan, I'm Sam. We'll be back next week to talk about maybe Nebraska being in the NCAA tournament and also a bunch of recruiting. Also, pay attention. Evan will have a CWS conversation next Monday after the field is released. A little Zoom call or something like that. Kind of break down the field. Pay attention and stay tuned for that. Thanks, Husker fans.